Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where three Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and with me as always on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton reporting for duty.
Benjamin Young beaming in.
And this week's conundrum, who is the most irritating recurring guest character in all of Star Trek?
Wow, that's saying a lot.
Saying a lot. I struggled with this topic a
yeah.
lot.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's so, like, I didn't want to pick a really obvious choice because,
right.
honestly, I went through lists of the most annoying Star Trek characters, and I would find that I would be like, yeah, they're okay. Or, yeah, not one of my favorites, but it was no one who really grated on me. You know, you could say, oh, Zek, you know, from DS9, but there'd be episodes where I loved him. It's just
I like Wally Shawn, yeah.
Yeah, it would just depend on the episode. And,
yeah.
you know, it's like Loxana. I hate her in, you know, say, Cost of Living, see last week's episode. But you watch her on some of the DS9 episodes,
yep.
and she can be quite compelling.
Yeah.
So I really struggled with it. And I had to come down to sort of a weird way of choosing. I chose a character who isn't necessarily the worst character in Star Trek, but he's a character who frustrated me every single time.
Wow.
And that character is not probably who you would guess.
Okay.
I'm curious. Let's just throw it out here. You guys, what are your guesses as to who could
frustrated
be?
You?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was just so feckless. I would have to think that, you know, Reginald Barclay would frustrate you.
Okay.
I thought he was a great character, though, because he was unlike any other character you'd see on that superhero starship known as the USS Enterprise 1701-D. But,
holy smokes.
Yeah, anyways.
No, I thought you were going to say Loxana, but I mean, now apparently we have a fan amongst us.
No. Yes, my choice is Vedic Barile Antos.
Oh, wow.
Actually, that it all makes sense now. It all makes sense.
And I'll tell you why this character torments me so.
His death episode was one of the worst, most grating episodes. What was that? Life Support? Is that the name of the...
His
death episode? Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
No, the one where he comes back was bad.
Oh,
as a different character.
From,
that was horrible.
The parallel universe?
That was horrible.
Or from the mirror universe?
Yes. We'll get to those in December.
Yes, okay.
We'll save those.
Sure.
Okay. Now, Vedic Barile, as far as I can tell, has 3 points he needs to hit to work as a character. He fails at all three. Number one, this is a character we are supposed to look at as a polar opposite of Kai Winn. You know, who's a Bajoran religious leader that we are supposed to hate. You know, she's like a fundamental, she's crazy, she's dangerous. We are supposed to look at him, at Barile, and be like, that is the, you know, that's the guy we should be following. He's the guy who has it together and is the one that should be inspirational. Now, I don't know if it was beyond the writers or just beyond Philip Anglin, the actor. I don't know. I can't speak for his charisma. I've never seen... Dallas, War of the Ewings, the 1998 TV movie. But this character is so flat and just lacks any power or presence. Like, we should want to follow this guy. We should look at him and be like, I understand why he's the hope for the Bajoran people. This is the guy we should be backing. There's nothing about this guy that is in any way interesting, compelling. You sit there and you're like, you know, I understand the role he's filling, but it's not working.
Yeah.
You know, I can never get behind this guy. Am I alone here?
No, I feel you, especially, I mean, we had mentioned that Mirror Universe episode. I mean, I thought Deep Space Nine did so well by the Mirror Universe. Like, I was always impressed with those episodes. Even, like, an episode like The Emperor's New Cloak, which is more of a comedic take on that universe.
Mm-hmm.
But this episode, where all we see is him transporting into the standard, the Prime Universe, I was bored out of my mind watching, like, the alternate version of Barile appear on the station.
And when he showed up, you're supposed to be like, oh my god, he's back! It was more like, oh no.
Yeah.
But guys, really, were any of the Bajoran religious figures at all compelling in the show?
I think Kai Winn is a well-drawn
she's
character.
Good, yeah, she is. She's
but I found her very... kind of annoying. Like, I was just like, oh, not her again.
But she's,
like,
annoying in a way you're supposed to be
exactly,
annoying.
It took
yeah.
time to develop that side of her as well. Remember when we
yeah.
first see her in the series?
Hello, my child.
Yeah, like, what is this, right?
But Baryl, yeah.
But
you
here's
can,
the
thing.
Louise Fletcher, great actress, though. Academy Award-winning actress.
Yeah.
She's fantastic in that role. She can act. She can, she's given an assignment. She does it, you know? And I mean, like, for what her character's supposed to be, she rocked it. Even though I have to say that her sleeping with
I was
going to
say that. I was
wow.
Say
that.
That almost ruined Star Trek for me. That really, I mean, that's a hard visual.
That was a spicy taste for my dreams. For
but I mean, just even think about that for a character beat. I mean, the writers were genius doing that. I mean, this is one of the most, like, reviled, like, Cardassians. And then, like, the religious leader of the Bajoran sleeps with him. And she's just horrified with herself, you know?
She had a great development, I have to say.
So, what you're saying then is, like, you know, it helped to have her sort of a weird romance on the show, or have, you know, to pair her her off with another character really added to her and made you feel something.
Yeah.
You know what didn't make me feel something? But the second part of my problem.
Okay.
The relationship between Kira and Baryl.
Right, yeah.
Because Kira is such a fiery woman, independent, tough. She's, frankly, the best female character in all of Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's jumping ahead to episodes to come, but I'll say it right now. Like, Kira is, I think, brilliantly written. Probably, I would argue, the best written character on the show.
I don't think you're giving Pulaski enough credit, but okay.
Well, on this show.
Oh,
we aren't talking TNG.
Okay, okay.
That's,
and then she falls with this wet blanket, which
this
is...
This guy,
yeah, yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
What does this guy offer?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it doesn't help that we know Odo's pining for her.
Yeah.
We like Odo. And then this guy is the Jeff of the Saved by the Bell.
Oh, wow.
Call
back. Saved by the Bell again from, was that 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
And I could get behind it if, again, Baryl was a character that we not necessarily liked, but respected.
Mm-hmm.
What do we respect about this guy?
Well,
his convictions.
And he doesn't turn into a warm, liquidy pile of goo into a pail at the end of the night, so...
Well,
wow. Okay.
I mean, that's got to be worth some points, right?
Yeah, okay.
Not in my experience.
He's a solid. I mean, no, I agree with you, Cam. He's not an engaging character. He doesn't have that charisma. But here's the thing. Maybe it's not all on the actor. What were the writers really giving him, you know?
That's true, but I do think a really charismatic actor can elevate material that isn't very good. Let's go to season 2 TNG.
Mm-hmm.
Look at a lot of that cast elevating some pretty terrible scripts, including Pulaski.
Oh, okay.
I'll argue, you know, for Diana Mulder in that case.
Sure, sure.
But Philip Anglim? I don't know. I'm baffled by this guy because I can look at other actors and, you know, see maybe some weak spots or their strengths and their filmography. I don't know anything about this guy, and all I have to go off is this. Yikes.
Yeah.
He's sort of a very bland 90s pretty boy.
Sure.
He's the kind you wouldn't see him as like a character in a series now. But in the 90s he has that look. You know what I mean?
He could have been an extra on Baywatch. I believe it.
Yeah. Melrose Place.
California Dreams.
Models Inc.
Models Inc. Wow.
So, let's get to my third point. The episode Life Support.
Yes.
You just mentioned it.
Yes.
The death of... I'm laughing as I say it. the death of Baryl episode.
Yes.
This is an episode that should be tragic. Because in the Bajoran faith, we are seeing the good side die and leave behind the evil in power.
Mm-hmm.
There's none of that. There's no sadness. There's no pathos. I got nothing out of this episode.
I got bored.
Was anybody else when he was on the when he was lying on the bed just like, is he gonna die already? Like,
yeah,
you
I know.
Like,
and there's like, now we have to decide whether to replace his brain or not. I'm just like, okay.
And
just
they're like,
get
we
on
have to
it.
Extend his life. I'm like, no, please don't. You know, and he settles this, you know, major dispute.
Yeah.
That should mean something. Instead, I'm like, this guy could not settle any disputes. This guy couldn't get two people to decide on where to go for dinner.
Yeah.
Much less something, you know, of, you know, galactic importance.
Well, I can't say I what was more heartbreaking, when Kai Opaka passed away or when Baryl, we had to endure 45 minutes of watching him slowly disintegrate, organ after organ replaced.
Well, I mean, I don't...
I kid. Hyopaka, she was a cipher. I really didn't get that much out of her.
But she was as if you hadn't been subjected to her as much as Baral.
Yeah.
Where you're like, just, my God, will they pull the curtain down already?
But you know what else is weird, too, is we all saw how hard Odo tried to win Kira's heart.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, there was a lot of it she didn't notice because he was struggling with himself. You know, right? And then you have this Baral character who kind of comes in, you know, kind of just saunters around. Doesn't really do much.
Says sort of like very shallow philosophical things.
Yeah.
Acts very bland.
And she falls like this. Like,
yes.
Like what?
Yeah.
Like how does that...
Is that not life, Ben?
But I think, you know what, when it comes to Kira Odo, I have to believe she just always thought of him as a friend. Like they were just always companions. She never ever even contemplated romance with him. And I think...
I agree.
That's one of the issues. And Odo, I don't think he's the most outgoing... I don't think he has game when it comes to the dating world.
But what
we know
of Kira is that you don't just walk into a room and win her over in 10 seconds, right?
Mm-hmm.
No.
You have to work for that, and somehow I don't think that he did that.
Yeah, no.
No.
I think it's very much like the plot driving the character's actions more than the other way around, and Deep Space Nine is usually pretty good at having the characters drive the plot more so.
That's what makes Baral, to me, so irritating, is you know... Put Baral in a weaker series, you probably wouldn't even think of him at all. But DS9 did so many side characters so well that he just sticks out. You know, this is a character we're subjected to, I believe, 8 times, which seems like too many.
Yeah.
The Star Trek world, that's quite a...
That's quite a few. Yeah. And my memories of him are so just like, they just disappear into thin air. And it's funny, after he was killed off, Ron Moore took part in a AOL chat.
I remember tuning into those AOL chats as a young lad. You go through those archives, they are still fascinating to read. But go on.
Yes, and a bunch of fans apparently had a petition to bring back Baral. I would be fascinated to meet these fans. If any of you are out there, please come up to me at the Las Vegas Star Trek Con this summer. I'll be at the front row of the captain's chair section. Just please, come talk to me.
What are you dressing as this year, Cam?
I will be in a Enterprise jumpsuit, much like Malcolm's.
Tactical?
Yes, tactical.
Excellent choice.
We went down to the Seattle convention last summer, and we were being questioned by the border guards. And I recall, you guys correct me if I'm mistaken, one of the border guards asked what we were dressing up as. And Cam had to chime in from the back seat, "A tactical officer!" It was quite amazing.
Not a proud moment.
That was a great moment, but also, I just have to mention this, is that we were walking, you know, and we the convention was held at, I believe it was the Hilton, right? In the airport?
Yeah.
It was the Hilton?
Yeah, yeah.
And in our minds, we thought there would be throngs.
This was in Seattle.
Of fans.
And we should also add, we all live in Vancouver, British Columbia. Yeah.
And so we thought there would be, maybe Cam thought there would be hordes of people dressed up as Star Trek characters. But lo and behold, as we were walking down the strip in the airport, Cam was actually the only person within any foreseeable distance dressed up. And, Cam...
was like, hello, ladies.
Yeah.
And he got car honks, unfortunately not from women, more from perplexed passers-by.
Yeah.
I recall there was that one hotel concierge that just gave him the biggest sneer.
Yeah.
You know, like...
It was another dark moment in many of my life of fandom. But I was going to say about Ron Moore in this AOL chat. Fans were asking him to really consider bringing him back. And his response was, "I'm afraid the truth is that the writing staff simply isn't interested in Vedic Baral. He served his purpose for a while, and then we felt the character and the relationship had run out of steam. The show has moved on, and so has Kira."
Wow, and so should you.
I can't imagine there's any steam in the first place. But...
No.
Oh, wow.
So it's just interesting because you can really read the apathy in that statement.
Yeah.
And I feel that apathy on myself, and at least in the room right now. And I hope out in your ears too.
I wonder, were the writers, they're having a meeting and they're like, this Baral character, we need to wind up this arc. Let's kill him in the most boring way possible.
How fitting. A fitting fashion.
Yeah. I suppose.
It's funny to me, though, that, you know, his last name, Antos.
Yeah?
It was named after Tony from West Side Story.
Oh.
Tony, in the film version of West...
Was he a jet or a shark?
Oh, God. I think he was a jet.
Okay.
But don't quote me on that. It's been a long time.
Okay.
But I will say that Tony, in the film version of West Side Story, is also the most boring character in the film.
Coincidence?
I think not. Reno Marino for the win.
Okay.
So, next up,
yeah,
Tyler.
I think I'm going to talk about an irritating character for kind of maybe different reasons. And it kind of fits into how I feel about television, how I feel about what kind of effects some characters can have on others. Remember, there's a very, very interesting episode of Deep Space Nine. It featured Dukat and Kira going on a mission.
Oh,
and,
good one.
At the end of it, you find out that Dukat is actually looking for his half-Bajoran, half-Cardassian daughter. Tora Ziel, she ends up coming to the series. She's kind of annoying, but here, that's not... There's characters that are more annoying. This is my issue that I have with her. I believe she was recast two additional times. We had three different actresses play this character. I don't think any of them really were that awesome. You know, again, not necessarily the reason why this would make for the most irritating character, but this character, I thought she was kind of a drag. She started off as a very young character.
Yeah.
Within a year or two, she's dating Garak. Which I always, that really bothered me because Andrew Robinson played that character's sexuality is very ambiguous. And to see that he's suddenly dating this this particular character, it kind of ruined Garak a little bit for me. Like, I just didn't get it because it seemed very strange that all of a sudden he would be interested in, like, this half-Bajoran, Cardassian youth, you know?
And it hurts all the more because Garak is... a badass character.
And that's the thing, that
yeah.
I really kind of got the feeling that, I mean, did she really reveal all that much about his character? I don't believe so. Like, and if you have a romantic pairing, I'd like to think that it's able to reveal new things about those characters. You see that with Worf and Jadzia on Deep Space Nine. You see that with Odo and Kira. I did not get that with Garak and Ziel. I have to say, like, it was just weird... seeing Garak so into this character who I really didn't find all that interesting. But here is, I can complain about this character. It was an interesting sort of way, you know, to get some insight into Dukat, you know. Like, I believe she was roaming around on his Klingon bird of prey for a little while until Kira convinced him to let her just stick around the station. So yeah, and that also kind of connects Kira to that character as well. She did have some redeeming qualities, but I think she really kind of dragged down Garak. But you come to that extended, you know, Dominion War arc that kicked off season 6. Ziel's featured quite heavily in that.
Yeah.
To the point where her character ends up just getting shot. And I was just like, oh.
Was it by the Breen?
No, I believe it was when, it was by Damar. Damar shoots
That's
Ziel.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a tragic moment because I was actually just starting to like this character. I like, you know what, I believe by that time it was the third actress who played her. And again, one of the things that bothered me about this character is she had been recast so many times.
It's hard to get invested, right?
It really
yeah.
is.
It's hard
you know?
when you fall for one character and then it's changed, right? It's just...
I'm just a side tangent. Did you guys... I didn't have this because I watched the series in different order than, you know, reading
yeah.
the broadcast and whatever. How did you guys feel watching Alexander in DS9 versus TNG?
That was strange because, okay, on TNG, it seemed almost seamless. Like, when they went from, like, toddler to, you know, like, young adolescent. Like, I bought it. But when you bring Alexander onto Deep Space Nine, it seemed like a completely different character. He seemed like a bumbling fool.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Alexander on TNG, he seemed more just like a human kid. He was raised by humans. His mom was half-human.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, he... And to see this bumbling fool end up, like, fighting for the Klingon Empire... during the Dominion War, I don't know, it was a little disconcerting. Just, and not because anything to do with the actor, it just seemed strange that this is where the character ended up somehow. And that's not the vibe that I got from him when we left him on TNG.
In my mind, Alexander is always the Parallax episode Alexander. Like, he was the character.
Oh, right.
He was the character that always embodied, and he was a feisty little kid, and you got the sense that he would grow up to something greater than what they depicted him as in DS9, which was a disappointment.
Well, what, and now I could be mistaken, but was there not a Next Generation episode where, like, Alexander from the future appears on the Enterprise? Cam, you may have not made it over there yet.
What season would that have happened in?
Maybe 6 or 7, I'm thinking.
Sounds familiar, but it escapes me at the moment.
Yeah, okay, well, I mean, you know, Alexander, I bought him more on TNG than I did on Deep Space Nine. I think we only got to see him twice on Deep Space Nine, but I still thought it was interesting because I didn't appreciate the fact that, you know, Worf transfers to Deep Space Nine and he just doesn't really bring up his kid anymore.
Mm-hmm, true.
It's good that they did bring him up and that he was actually part of the series once again. He turned into the good luck charm aboard the Rotaran because he was such a bumbling fool. I don't know.
So which did you find more jarring, like Alexander or Dekot's daughter? In terms of recasting, like which one do you think was...
Honestly, probably the Alexander switch.
You dealt with that,
You know,
do you think it was just because it was spaced over a greater period of time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet with... The Zial, it was just like all of a sudden she's in one episode, she's like 12 or something. Next episode, she's still, I don't know, like a young person. She's a little bit older by the time Garak's dating her, I think. I forget if it was the second or third actress who was playing her by the time Garak started dating her, but I don't know. It's tough because clearly the writers, they weren't feeling whatever actresses were playing this character, but they wanted... They saw something in this character.
But they were like, we got Vedic Barile sealed away.
Oh, I know.
We're good.
But, you know, and you see the tragic end that she suffered. Damar kills her. Dukat ends up going a little nuts, you know. And Garak is, you know, like, really hurt by all this. Do you recall Garak ever bringing up this character again? And that's another thing that bothered me about this character. Garak's so, like, torn up about it for that one episode, Sacrifice of Angels. We never really hear about it again after that. But, I mean, they do continue that thread with Dukat. I believe in the episode Waltz, and Dukat's going a little bit nutty, and I think a lot of that has to do with the death of his daughter. There are redeeming qualities of Zial, but I find it very hard to suspend my disbelief on a series when you recast a character not once, but twice, and there's three different actresses portraying her. And I just don't think that she brought a lot to the table when it comes to servicing a great, great character like Garak. It just ruined a lot of that character for me because I don't buy him dating this
jailbait.
Just jailbait. You know, I understand what the writers were going for. I mean, like, he's an exile on the station. She's caught between being a Bajoran and being a Cardassian. Who do they really have to go to? But the thing is, like... all of Deep Space Nine, they're all full of misfits. Like, nobody really fits in, which means everybody can kind of fit in. And I don't think it was necessary to pair those two characters up, you know?
Do you think they were paired up just to keep her in sort of the storyline? Because how else would she exist in that story if she wasn't...
Well, remember during the Season 6 Dominion War arc, she's interacting mostly with Kira, you know? And Garak is off the station. He's out helping the Federation, you know, fight the Cardassians. And so... I mean, she could have had that relationship or some sort of relationship going with Kira, and I think it would have been, you know...
I liked her relationship with Kira, though.
Yeah.
But is that enough to sustain a character like that, character like that?
She's a character who honestly, when we considered this topic, never popped into my mind.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of glad you brought it up, because it was like, oh, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
But she was a character who, to me, works better as a plot device.
Yeah.
And it just depends on how good the plot is. As you say, the Garak plot... it just doesn't even really work.
She just didn't seem
it doesn't really
all
work.
That fleshed out, but she was she appeared in so many episodes, and like she just seemed very much like a cipher, and I just didn't get that much out of her, and it kind of dragged down other characters that I really did like. I mean, she added, you know, a little bit here or there to Dukat or Kira, and but I don't know. Overall, I can't fault the actresses that much. I mean, because I think maybe the writers weren't even all that certain what to do with her at times, you know? Mm-hmm.
But I think the show is richer for her existence than...
But as a plot device, like Cam said, like because it really kind of pushed forward like Ducat's arc throughout the rest of the series.
And her friendship with Kira.
Yeah.
It does have, like, there's some genuine emotion.
Absolutely.
When her character, you know, bites the big one.
Yeah.
And using her as a vehicle for Kirk. Ducat's, spiral into madness.
Yeah.
You know, it all works. It's just how they use her is questionable. You are right, like, the shift in actresses is jarring, because when I think about her, I don't have an idea of what her personality was, because there was no real consistency of the actresses.
No,
She's just kind of...
And that's the thing.
A storytelling tool.
When a character becomes a storytelling tool, I kind of tend to check out, and I'm not invested in that character so much. And especially when it comes to just her relationship with Garak, like, to me, I never pictured him as someone who is seeking, like, a romance with, like, this young woman. And
it was more like Bashir.
He was sending signals to Bashir early on in the series.
Which would have been the braver choice, really.
Well, the thing is, I think Andrew Robinson just played that character's sexuality very ambiguously. And when they take away that ambiguity, I think that kind of takes away from the character. I'm not saying, like, you had to make Garak gay, but I'm just saying, like, I think that ambiguity...
It
would have
been better almost undefined.
Yeah, that character is always about ambiguity. You didn't know what to believe. But then when you say, oh no, we're going to nail it down, he's totally into half Bajoran, half Cardassian young chicks.
And
I'm
who
just
isn't?
Like,
am
oh,
I
yeah,
right, guys?
I mean, to me, it was just a little disappointing that they used her for that. They could have still used her to forward Ducat's arc and forward, you know, Kira a little bit, but they kind of dragged down Garak and just into a plot that didn't quite work. And I understand why the writers were tempted to do that. It makes sense, but I don't think it was necessary.
You could sense with DS9 a lot of time it was experimentation. It was like, okay, what happens if we put these two characters together?
Yeah.
Or, you know, these two, and let's just see what happens. They tried it, it didn't work, and that's probably why it was never really acknowledged again.
Oh, do you remember that awful Loxana episode where she's going through, like,
how has she not come up yet as the most irritating character?
Oh no, I think she was going like through the Betazoid equivalent of menopause on Deep Space Nine,
oh,
and then like everybody's becoming attracted to each other, and that's how they're pairing them off. Was that the first episode? Who was Kira? Was it Kira and Bashir that were kissing, or was it Kira and Barile? I forget. Like I remember that particular shot, and like Kira really embraced.
I think it was Bashir.
Perhaps, yeah.
I feel like it
listeners,
was not.
Please write in to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com and inform us ignorant fans about this.
I believe the first hints of a romance with Barile was her dreaming it.
Okay.
So I don't know if that episode would have come after the dream. I don't know.
Excuse me at the moment.
I just remember that Keiko and Chief O'Brien, it was revealed that they were attracted to no one else on the station, which I'm just like, okay. They're a committed couple.
Good for them.
Good for them, yeah. But that just made me think of pair ups. But okay, you got my thoughts on Zial.
Ben.
Yes, friends.
Close us off.
You know, this is no obscure character, as I know any TNG fan will be able to identify with this. But the Traveler is, I believe, the most irritating character in all of Star Trek. And you know why?
Wow.
Because...
all of Star Trek.
You know what? Because, you know, unlike some other Trek, you know, Trek enthusiasts, I actually liked the Wesley Crusher character. Maybe because I identified with his age at the time. I was, you know, I was roughly the same age as he was on the show.
You wore a lot of onesies.
I didn't wear the onesies. But, you know, as a kid, you sort of identify with someone that, you know, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why he was,
Exactly, right? So I watched his character, you know, and then, I mean, the Traveler appeared quite early on in Wesley's career. I believe it was season 1, episode 6.
Where no man has gone before,
No one has gone before,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so we're meant to believe that this, you know, this character... propulsion expert, I believe, comes on board, and he has this odd-looking assistant, alien assistant, you know, who doesn't appear to be part of Starfleet. He's just some guy who's following this other guy around. It doesn't really explain much. He's meant to be a bit mysterious, right? But one second, you know, everything's normal. Next second, the Enterprise is going warp 22 or something like that. this guy's disappearing in and out of reality.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the heck is going on, right? You know, and I'm just like, what the hell's going on here? You know, there's a bunch of stuff happening. I think Mr. Kaczynski was the propulsion expert's name. Anyways, so, you know, this is kind of a weird episode. You know, it doesn't really explain what's going on, and then you forget about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
For several years, essentially. And you see Wesley's character, you know, go off to the academy and whatnot. And then...
hangs out with Nick Locarno.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
He gets
yeah.
all to, you know, what young men will get up to, you know, do.
Wow. Nick Locarno?
Well, there's lots of daughters.
That was,
you know, like,
Ashley Judd, that's...
Yeah, that was a good score for him.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, you know, about six seasons go by with no mention of this Traveler character. We think he's done with, for all we know, right?
Every week I was tuning in thinking, is the Traveler coming back?
Why is he so...
They can't be done with him.
Why is he so absent from the series? Anyways, flash forward to...
I gotta know, did they tease him in, like, the next episode? Like, the Traveler returns.
I'm glad he was... what I thought at the time was he was done with. But, you know, season 7, episode 20, the journey's
I like
end.
To think you went through, like, 6 years, like, thank God we're done with the journey.
So,
every episode, you're looking through, like, the guest star credits.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
You know, and you're like, oh, good, he's not in here.
Yeah. So season 7, episode 20, journey's end. I don't know if Tyler, you may remember that episode.
With the Aboriginal people,
yeah,
right?
There's a dispute over land.
Yes.
Which is a very familiar topic to... most people in the developed world,
and especially where we are too.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Yes. So we have
Canada.
Canada, yeah.
We have this episode, and you know, there's not. I mean, was there any indication that Wesley was thinking of defecting from the life of Starfleet prior to this episode?
I always thought Wesley was always kind of being pushed in a direction. For himself, I maybe he was pushing himself in that direction. I never really thought that he was all that invested in, like, that Starfleet career.
But
so much.
How was he introduced in the series as a prodigy, right?
Yeah,
essentially, that it set, you know, it planted the seed that this kid was going to do something, you know, substantial, right? One day.
Yeah, here's the thing about Wesley. I think what you're saying is dead on. I don't know if the show always portrayed it that well, though, because they really did portray it as Wesley is going to Starfleet. Like,
yeah.
The series was really about Wesley is going to, you know, become a great Starfleet officer. But it doesn't really make sense when you take into account the character. This is a kid who's so far beyond anyone else.
Right.
Like, Starfleet would be too restrictive
for
someone like him, who's going to keep learning. He's going to get to that point where he's going to go through Starfleet. He's going to be bored senseless. Like, he'd be thinking so far beyond that.
One of the things I really loved about Deep Space Nine, like, watching it, I was just like, oh, yeah, that's Jake Sisko. He's going to join Starfleet, like, just like his father did and stuff. And then, like, they pretty early on, maybe within season 3, season 4, Jake makes it very clear to his dad, you know, I'm not interested in pursuing a career in Starfleet.
Yeah.
Out of all people, I never expected Nog to be the Starfleet.
But you can buy Nog becoming a Starfleet officer once that begins.
Yeah.
Like with Wesley, he's just, you don't quite buy it. And I think it's kind of the fault of the writers for not maybe escalating his, how brilliant he is and how far beyond anyone else he thinks. I think they say one of the hardest things to do is to write hyper smart characters.
Mm-hmm.
That's why if you watch, say, Batman the Animated Series, the Riddler is rarely on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they would always say to write the Riddler is really difficult because you have to come up with all these riddles and, you know, be so smart. To write a character like a Wesley who's so far beyond anyone else in the room is really tough.
Yeah.
But I mean, I enjoyed the episodes where he came back and, you know, he'd come back and something would happen, you know.
I like him more as a recurring character
than as
a regular.
Oh, the game. That was one of the best
episodes
of Next Generation.
Definitely. Yeah.
Cam, have you gotten to the game yet?
Yes, I believe so.
What did you think of that?
Yeah, it's a good episode.
Great episode.
Yeah.
Great episode.
Yeah.
So we flash forward to this Journey's End episode. You know, dispute over land and all this stuff. All of a sudden, one of the Native Americans, or you know, the Aboriginals on the show,
First Nations people, yeah.
Suddenly, oh, he's a Traveler. 7 years later, surprise, he's back.
Yeah, and a legion of people are like, who?
Yeah, exactly, right? So I just feel like, you know, don't you think that Wesley's character could have, I mean, even in the movies or something, they should have been able to give him a better ending than just a guy who all of a sudden is like the Traveler, can bend space and time with his mind?
as opposed to guys sitting at table in Star Trek Nemesis?
From what I understand, Wesley's scenes were heavily edited in Nemesis, and there was supposed to be some sort of acknowledgement of, like, his travels.
Like,
but
I just think, like, how, you know, he was quite, he was front and center in the first season, right? You know, they were building up for something,
first
right?
First two.
Yeah, they were building up to something or somewhere.
Well, I think it was heavily implied that Wesley was supposed to be Picard's son, and they really just dropped that thread.
Like,
oh, interesting.
You know, like they're like, no, you know what, let's forget about this whole, like, Picard Crusher potential
move.
Romance. And
but at the same time, you can't set a character for 2 years on a show and then just drop it like a hot potato, right?
No.
So I thought the way he ended in this episode, how he just quits all of a sudden what he's been building up for like 6 years and then runs off with this alien from the first season, like that was a terrible, terrible way to kill this character off.
Is your dislike of the Traveler similar to my dislike of Zial in that it's like the effect that it has on a certain character? I mean, like, you're more like, you know, the Traveler appears, Wesley's going to take off from Starfleet, and that kind of affects that character in a way that you don't necessarily appreciate.
Yeah, I think I associate the Traveler with basically, essentially, the death of Wesley Crusher.
Right.
Interesting.
It's basically what the thing...
Can you appreciate that they were trying to give Wesley some sort of, like, closure on the series? Or do you think, you know what, might as well just forget about it?
I don't know. That's kind of like, that's like kind of watching the final Seinfeld being like, you know what, they were trying to give some closure.
if you tank it, it doesn't matter.
That's true.
I'd almost rather just not know, you know, Wesley goes off, like, just maybe...
He's in Starfleet.
Yeah, he's in Starfleet.
He's doing fine.
He's doing something. And maybe years later they can revisit it and he
or
could
bring
be...
him into a movie as a
crew
member.
Exactly. Or a captain or something, right?
Yeah.
To have this guy quit what he's been doing for 6 years and run off with an alien time bender... I can't buy into that. I'm sorry. That's not, you know.
Yeah. It has a creep factor to it.
A little, it does. This guy comes back to collect his, like, you know, like 7 years later, you know, like.
He's like, I noticed you as a boy.
Yeah. So.
He's,
you know,
18 now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's different reasons why we may find a character irritating.
Yeah.
You know? And so this, you know, that is my personal opinion on why I find this character.
Now, what is your opinion, like, of the Traveler character himself? Removed from Wesley.
Is he necessary? Like, what?
Well, I mean, does he even have any sort of character traits or anything like that? He's just a cipher.
He's not explained. Like, his character. How did he become an assistant?
It's funny, when I watched that episode, I was actually really looking forward to it, just based on episode title, because the original series, the second pilot was called "Where No Man Has Gone Before."
This is a bold title. There is a lot of expectations
to
go with this title.
So you are like, as an original series fan, I'm seeing the title "Where No One Has Gone Before." And I'm like, well, that was a great episode. That, like, the original series, that was the one where Gary Marshall came in. It really nailed Kirk, Spock. Everything was perfectly put into place. So I'm like, that's big. Like, to call an episode title that.
Yeah.
Is big. It's like when they did The Naked Now, was like The Naked Time. You know, that was following a similar concept. And
you mean the exact same concept?
Well, I'm being kind of kind, but yeah. But you know, it worked okay, and I could understand why they shared a similar title. I have no idea why this shares a
except for
the fact that
they're trying to be
beings,
PC instead of no man, no.
But it's
one.
Like, I guess maybe beings who can kind of have, like, almost. Super, you know, godlike powers, I guess?
To call an episode what they say in the title sequence, it better be a defined...
I mean, he's the Traveler. I guess he's going to new frontiers and so forth, I guess.
Mind you, recall the title of the series finale of Enterprise. And again, I haven't seen it, but I've heard it is one stinker of an episode.
Well, we could do...
I should say... That's
a topic for another day.
Yeah. That episode's name is These Are the Voyages, which, you know...
And the thing is, I mean, as toxic as that episode is, it was created with the intention of being a Valentine to fans of Star Trek. So while they may not have succeeded in any way, that was their intention. I don't know, watching Where No One Has Gone Before, what their intention was.
Yeah.
You know?
The episode was just, I mean, what was the point, you know?
Ships go fast.
Yeah, I mean, you sit through the episode and it's just kind of a lot of nonsense, then Wesley saves the day, and it's like, okay, you know, and it's not a horrible episode, I don't think. It's sort of a very forgettable season one you know.
Although he does, Wesley does get promoted to Acting Ensign in the episode.
Yeah, well, I guess it does have something going for it then.
But, I mean, does that live up to...
What does that even mean, Acting Ensign?
Well, but he can't be an ensign because he hasn't gone through Starfleet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just seems like kind of a bit of a cop-out. Like, they I just don't feel as if they really knew what to do with this character, you know, and that's kind of why he got, you know, just so much grief from the fandom. It's just because he was kind of annoying and the writers didn't really know what to do with him, and, you know, it's tough in that situation. So, like, yes, let's take, like, some, prepubescent kid and put him on the bridge with all these other people that have been, like, trying their whole lives to get into Starfleet.
You have to wonder if, like, you know, well, not so much Data, but, like, Riker and, you know, Troy and whatever are looking at this kid going, like, what the hell? Like,
yeah.
I put in years of training and study. You know, I had to start, like, cleaning the closets back in whatever ship. This kid, like, leaps up here?
Well, I was even looking at, I was on Memory Alpha looking at lists of recurring characters, and there's all these, like, kind of no-name bridge officers on Enterprise that appeared in, like, 70 episodes or whatever.
Yeah.
They must be looking at Wesley Crusher like, how come the captain's always hanging out with him? Like, well, how come he gets to hang out with the cool people? And, you know, I went through the academy, I'm serving on the ship, I haven't been promoted in, like, 4 or 5 years, and, like, this dude is, like, getting way too much attention. You know.
But then again, those other guys can't bend space-time, so...
Okay, you know what?
That's true.
Good point.
But you know what? I mean, hey, I just realized as we were discussing this that we could have a whole episode just on Wesley, the analyzing Wesley Crusher, so...
And who knows...
Yeah.
Who knows where we're going to go?
You guys still think I'm joking about my Pulaski attribute.
Wow. We can do one episode Wesley Crusher, one episode Pulaski, and one episode Luxana Troy. Who none of us chose
trilogy.
Her as most annoying character.
Which is really interesting.
I assume one of you would choose that. I mean, you know, I just...
Like I said, you know, it's a character that I loathe on TNG a lot, but when it came to DS9, I'm like, you know what? There is value to this character.
Really? Even the one where she, her and Odo, like... I mean, do we...
No,
do we...
You know, I thought that was actually...
Are you talking about the one where he was
falling
apart,
couldn't hold
his form,
yeah.
And she, like, helped? Yeah, you know, that was kind of touching.
Yeah,
really?
Just, like, for him being able to, okay, I'm gonna have to be vulnerable, you know? And that's still very early on in the series, you know?
But it just seemed like he's just another guy trapped in her web, you know?
Yeah.
Like...
What is the appeal, do you think, of Luxana Troy, too? Is it just, like, that she can kind of...
Well,
read what they're thinking and, like, anticipate them.
I always thought it was funny how she was, like, her and Deanna obviously are you know, she was sort of like Deanna's, you know.
Mother?
Yes.
Yes,
her mother.
Yes.
Yes, she was.
But, like, it was almost like her kryptonite, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
How she would pop up from time to time and then...
But that was, remember when Worf's parents came and visited the ship?
Yeah.
Like, he was just, like, he wanted to crawl out of his skin
because
of that. You know, it seemed very much like all those characters had, like, parental issues. Like, I remember Riker had daddy issues.
Wesley
did.
That was dead.
Remember,
that's an issue.
Picard, he went and visited his family vineyard, and his brother did not approve.
Right.
And it didn't
sound
as if his father really approved of his whole, you know, trek into Starfleet.
I think because that just provides some depth. You know, especially in a sort of...
That could be a whole other episode, too. I'm thinking, like, father issues. Even, like, Kirk and the J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
Films?
Yeah.
Do you know who
right.
didn't have daddy issues, though? I mean, like, Sisko. Like, that was the only character, captain that we saw who he had, like, this strong relationship with his father. And Sisko also had a strong relationship with his own son. I mean, it is interesting seeing, like, that those two characters that, you know, they have their parents there. Except, Jake obviously lost his mother in the Borg attack. But, I mean, it is interesting to see that those... parental relationships are still very strong in that series relative to the other series.
Even though Sisko slept with Bizarro Jadzia.
Do you blame him?
I mean, he had to do what he had to do to survive in that universe. Got to make sacrifices sometimes.
Yeah, that is...
He took one for
quite,
the team.
Quite the sacrifice.
Yeah.
Yes.
And on that note, I believe our assignment is complete. So we've had our say on this week's topic. Here are some of your responses to last week's topic. The best and worst holodeck programs.
My name is Stefan. I'm from Alaska. And I would say my vote for the worst holodeck program would have to be the Fairhaven program from season 6 of Voyager. I never really got the point. Characters just seemed to waste time there. It wasn't funny to me. I don't really watch science fiction to watch people play with goats. I didn't get it. That said, I'm actually watching the show right now. I'm on season 6, and I haven't seen those episodes in a few years, so my opinion may change, but I just remember it as being dreadfully boring.
Hey, this is Mark from North Vancouver. I would say the best holodeck came from our man Bashir, and the holodeck in that episode was great because it was based on the 60s Bond films, and they did a great job of capturing the spirit of those 60s Bond films. That era is really comes through in that episode, so that's my favorite, and I stand by it.
If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send us your thoughts and feedback. Or you can also send us a 30-second to 1-minute audio clip telling us what your most irritating character in all of Star Trek is. You may appear in a future show, should you be so lucky. You can also follow us on the Twitters. You can find me at Cam V. Smith. Tyler?
I will be reporting for duty on Twitter at Reportin. That's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N.
Ben.
B_Y-O-N-G.
Okay, until next time, the arena, as always, is closed.
Transfer complete.